Monday. It is Monday, I think, if I am not mistaken. Correct? Monday? At least I know that much on the Nancy Skinner program, and I'm Nancy Skinner. I also know that much. And I know John is back. Say hi, John. John's in you're kind of in a, like a crabby mood here, John.
Hello, world.
Wake, say something. Say, look at that mood. He's like, got that.
I said, hello, world.
There you go. All right. So John is back from doing some stints in sports. 866-991-9927, the number to the program, for the time being, of course. Had a good weekend myself. Thank you very much for asking. Just to share before we get into, lots going on today. Lots. We've got Democratic strategists, Republican strategists, bloggers, stories, sound, you name it, all kinds of controversy going on the Nancy Skinner Show today, as usual. But, good weekend. I went and saw the Eagles, you know, as in Hotel California, the Eagles at the Palace, and, I'm thinking they got to be pretty old, the Eagles, like 60s, I would think, something like that. But I was kind of anticipating a boring show, but it turned out to be great. And significant in that, did you know that Glenn Frey, one of the obviously lead singers of the Eagles, is from Royal Oak, Michigan? Did you know that, John?
No, I did not know that.
Yes, well, he announced it to a packed stadium at the Palace where Jay Leno is coming. He's coming to do a concert for Detroiters because we're in such bad shape. Jay Leno's coming soon. We should get him on the program. Do we know that date?
He's here April 7th, which is sold out, and April 8th, which is as yet not.
Okay. Well, it's just sold. I thought it was free. That's the whole point. He's doing
yes, but okay. Tickets are unavailable for the April 7th show. They are still available for the April 8th show.
Well, let's try. Wouldn't that be cool that he's coming here to do this for Detroiters? So I thought that was pretty interesting. And President Obama was on 60 Minutes last night. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. His appearance there, he fought back at Dick Cheney. Yeah! Not too hard, but he was able to go back at him a little bit and talk more about the financial situation we are in. He was actually asked, I'm going to play this now. I'm going to go out of order. He was asked about, he was explaining the severity of the situation. He said he believes that the global financial system remains at risk of implosion with the failure of Citigroup or AIG, which could touch off an even more destructive recession and potentially depression. But he's explaining all of this, what we're doing, how complicated this is, and we're going to get into the newest aspect revealed today, the banking, the market for toxic asset market. I'm going to give you my take on that. The plans announced this morning by Tim Geithner. President also spoke a little bit about that this morning. Primetime news conference tomorrow night, by the way, 7:45. So we'll hear more about it. But I thought this was sort of interesting. It was Steve Croft who did the infamous Hillary and Bill Clinton interview right after the Jennifer Flowers thing. I believe that was Steve Croft. But he said, "You're sitting here and you're laughing. You're laughing about some of these problems. Are people going to look at this and say, I mean, he's sitting there just making jokes about money? How do you explain this?" And here's Obama's response.
How do you deal with it? I mean, explain your mood and your laughter.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be...
Are you punch drunk?
No, there's got to be a little gallows humor to get you through the day. You know, sometimes my team talks about the fact that if you had said to us a year ago, that the least of my problems would be Iraq, which is still a pretty serious problem. I don't think anybody would have believed it. But we've got a lot on our plate and a lot of difficult decisions that we're going to have to make.
So I guess, we talked about this last Friday at 866-991-9927. Certainly got a lot of emails about this. I'll be sharing with you as well. If you go to my website, NancySkinnerLive.com, a lot of people weighing in on the demeanor of the president, my use of humor inappropriately, my calling Rush Limbaugh honey bunny. And so
it fits him.
This whole thing, honey bunny?
It fits him, honey bunny. I mean, really.
Well, we're going to get into that a little more. It's not about honey bunny. It's called humor, okay? It's called humor. And even the president has he has to. I mean, I can't believe Steve Croft said you're laughing, as if he's supposed to be somber. If somehow when you convey something, unless you act like you're about ready to off yourself, you're not serious. You can be explaining things as we do, and as I'm going to get into on this toxic asset plan and the market for these, this partnership announced this morning. It doesn't mean things, are less serious or you're not taking them seriously if you laugh or if you find humor in any of this. It means you are sane. It means you are alive. You are a live person who is, trying to deal with things as best you can. Let's get into that a little bit. President, this morning, he's going to do a prime time. We're going to hear a lot more tomorrow about this latest step. This is what he said. Kind of the whole, if you've been following this, if you've been listening to this show, then you know that it makes sense. We had the first step was the stimulus bill, got that passed already. Some good news starting to happen as a result of that. Markets are rallying today, based on this plan, this, Treasury plan, but also housing starts. Good news in terms of, Not housing starts, I stand corrected. Stocks jump on bank plan rise in home sales. Existing home sales for the first time have shown a surprising gain. Well, we had a stimulus plan that passed. We have a housing plan. He talked about those first steps.
Step one was making sure that we had a stimulus package that was robust enough to fill the huge gap in demand that was created by the recession. Step two was making sure that we had a effective homeowners plan to try to keep people in their homes and to stabilize the housing market. Because of the work that's already been done, you are starting to see glimmers of hope in the housing market that stabilization may be taking place. Mortgage rates are at a very, very low level, and you're starting to see some activity in the housing market. We then took a series of steps to improve liquidity in what had been secondary markets that had been completely frozen. And we are now seeing activity in student loans and auto loans. We announced last week a small business initiative that ensures that we have more activity, and you start seeing small businesses being able to get credit again in order to sell products and services and make payroll. And this morning, Secretary Geithner announced the latest element in this multi-pronged approach.
And he wasn't laughing the whole time. He was just basically saying, here's what we've done. And then we're going to get to what he did. But which also brings up another question I'm going to put out there about the punch drunk thing, Croft asking him that. There's a blog in the New York Times today about your signature cocktail. I kid you not. What we choose to drink can reveal more about us than, say, our astrological sign or whether we prefer Elvis or the Beatles. And there's a whole thing about what you drink and what it says about you and how people, professional actresses, this and that, how they choose this very carefully. So I'm going to throw that in the mix today. Why not? Since Steve Croft asked the question. He asked, are you drunk? You're laughing? Are you drunk? 1-866-991-9927. What do you drink? What would you say? Certain. I would think Cheney. Definitely, he's a bourbon guy. I have no idea, but I would think bourbon. But I saw two guys drinking Cosmos this weekend at a bar, and I have to say, maybe I'm jumping to conclusions, but gay. Is that right? Was that wrong of me? 866-991-9927. As we laugh our way through the toxic asset plan, step three on the Nancy Skinner Show.
This morning, Secretary Geithner announced the latest element in this multi-pronged approach, and that is a mechanism that he, in close consultation with the Federal Reserve and the FDIC, has initiated in order to allow banks to take some of their bad assets off their books, sell them into a market, but do so in a way that doesn't just obligate taxpayers to buy at whatever price they're willing to sell these assets. Instead, involves a public-private partnership that allows market participants who have every interest in making a profit to accurately price these assets so that the taxpayers share in the upside as well as the downside.
There you have it. The much-awaited bad asset plan. Announced this morning by Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and commented on during the economic briefing by President Obama. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. Your source for trying to take in a lot of complex economic information and spit it out in, you know, really stupid, analogous ways so that you get it all. That's what I do. What I did on Cashing In over the weekend, if anyone saw that. Did you miss it? Did you watch? Could you turn? Could you even bring yourself to put Fox News on to see me? Because we got some sound a little bit later. I'm going to play it there so you can tell I'm not pulling any punches when we got on and talked about it. All right, so here's the deal with this, with the plan. This is what they're trying to do. You know, as the president said, we had to take care of just a stimulus bill, get the economy moving again, spend because no one's got, we have a lack of demand. So we got to get some spending going. The housing plan must be fixed. I'm going to bring that up here in a second. And here's the bank plan. Okay, when Tim Geithner first sort of outlined it, the market panned it. But now here's the headline on CNBC right now. For stocks, Treasury plan may be a game changer. In fact, the market is up. Let's see, the Dow is up. Where are we right now? Can't see. But over the last, it was up about a few hundred points this morning, 1,000 points over the last 2 weeks, despite all those people who are saying, oh, it's Obama crashing the Dow. Here's what they're proposing to do. They're going to say, all right, so this is a problem that the banks, the reason they're not lending is because they ended up holding too many of these bad securities, mortgage-backed securities and other derivatives based on bogus assets. And so they don't want to lend you money, lend anyone money, because no one knows what any of this stuff is worth. And it's they have to have so much capital on their balance sheet. So that's why the economy has come to a halt, well, a grind. Yeah, a halt, actually. 6.2%, we would say it fell off the cliff. Warren Buffett was right. There's no lending going on. So what they're going to do is instead of just buying the toxic assets themselves, okay, that is the Treasury, just writing a check, which I equated that is, the dumb analogy is, that's like buying a used lottery ticket. Okay, that is like, you know it didn't win. It was not a winning ticket, but you're going to buy it. Okay, that's what that plan was. That was just much discussed. This one is different. This is a public-private investment program where we, the taxpayers, we essentially try to entice the Bernie Madoffs of the world to buy up some of these assets. So it'd be I think it's 50-50. We're going to put $100 billion of taxpayer dollars in it, our skin in this game. And the goal is to buy up at least $50 billion, maybe a trillion, off their books so they start lending again. All right, that's the plan. When we come back, I'll tell you my dumb analogy for this. Not that the plan is dumb, but my dumb analogy. You weigh in, and I'm going to give you my take because I do have an interesting take on this. 866-991-1927 is the number to the Nancy Skinner program. And Marcy Wheeler, super-duper awesome blogger out there, is going to join me to talk a little bit about this and the AIG bonus mess and all that kind of good stuff on a Monday on the Nancy Skinner Show. Charles writes in at NancySkinnerLive.com. Nancy, of course what you drink says more about you than your birth sign. All your birth sign says about you is a range of days in which you were born. As for what Cheney drinks, my sources tell me he just drinks bitters with battery acid chaser. The question on the table, what do these people drink? What does it say? How did we come on that? Because Steve Kroft asked President Obama if he was punch drunk because he's laughing. How dare he laugh at such a time? It is a Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927, as we try to deconstruct this very complex plan to buy toxic assets. Partner with rich people to buy toxic assets, get them off the books of the banks so the banks can start lending again. And I'm going to go into my thoughts on this plan and what needs to happen and some other analogies here just in a short moment. But joining me to talk a little bit about all this mess, especially the AIG bonuses and tracking that down and all the hypocrisy surrounding that, is Marcy Wheeler. Marcy is a great blogger now with Fire Dog Lake, but started at the Next Hurrah. Often you can find her work at Daily Kos, Huffington Post, Michigan Liberal. She's actually at U of M, Ann Arbor. You actually didn't go to, did you? You went to U of M, didn't you, Marcy?
Hi, Nancy. I've got a graduate degree from U of M, so I was there for 5 years.
Very smart lady then, of course, and very nice person, and great blogger. Did a lot of work during the Scooter Libby thing, did live blogging through that whole trial. So, first, a couple of quick questions, and worked for Howard Dean. By the way, programming note, Jim Dean will be on the program tomorrow at 4 o'clock. to talk about the fifth anniversary of DFA. So I wanted to make sure I got that out there. A couple of questions before we get into your post today, Marcy, and that has to do with what do you drink? Do you drink alcohol?
I am in Aries. I heard you also talking about your star sign, and I'm in Aries, and my birthday's coming up, so I had a party for myself at Arbor Brewing Company last weekend, and I had some beer there. So
beer. Okay. So beer, and you're in Aries. Aries, that's a good sign. See, Charles, he's wrong, because your sign does say quite a bit about you, I think. Aries, you guys are go-getters. Really, Aries like to take on the world and get things done. Now, Pisces, I'm Pisces. I just had my birthday last week. And we're the old souls of the universe. We feel everyone's pain, you know.
I hope you had a happy birthday.
Emotional, intuitive ones. Yeah, I did. Hung out with my friends and family. All righty, so let's get to the issue at hand, Marcy. The rage over the bonuses continues. And then over the weekend, there was a lot of back and forth, backsliding about whether we should be outraged or not, because especially now they're trying to sell us the new plan and saying, well, the bonuses, we have to have bonuses because no one's going to go into the start partnering with us to buy these toxic assets if they think the government's going to come in and gratuitously, you know, find that bonus and then tax it out of them. Do you have a thought on that aspect before we go to your post?
Well, the timing is really important because in addition to announcing his plan today, Geithner is testifying before the House Financial Services Committee tomorrow with Bernanke. And they're going to be asked either about, I think Geithner has two appearances. He's busy all week. But he's going to be asked a lot less about AIG in particular because they're going to be asking about this latest bailout plan. So I think the timing is relevant, but it's also relevant because to me, a lot of people are saying it's a shiny object. We shouldn't get distracted from it, but I think it is the means by which Congress can start finally learning what the heck has already gone on with our money in Congress and really demonstrating some of the problems with what is going on with us giving money to all these finance companies.
You point out in your post today, you post under Empty Wheel, the Fed and the bonuses. I went through this article in the Wall Street Journal. They went back and outlined the whole mess and, you know, who knew what when kind of thing. The Wall Street Journal, now this is not an editorial, right? This is their reporting, which is generally much different and more fair than their editorials, which are wacky. But so essentially what I think they came across, if you read this article, is that the Fed told, and there's a lot of discussions going around, the Fed was in the loop, and the lower rung Treasury Department officials were in the loop. But Geithner himself was spared the gory information until March 10th, I believe it was.
Yeah, except that the problem with their argument is that there are a couple sets of bonuses. There's the bonuses that the finance product people got. That's the latest outrage, which is this $135 million, which was awarded 10 days ago. And those bonuses were negotiated in March of 2008, okay, because what happened was they fired their seat. Well, they tucked their CEO into retiring with a huge golden parachute. And at that point, they decided
to spend more time with his family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At that point, they decided to bribe all of these other crazy finance people to stick around, even though everything was blowing up in their face. So that's where those bonuses come from. But what's important is right after we bailed out AIG in September of 2008, AIG put in what was the first of another set of bonuses. At first it was 130 people, and then it was another 38 people. And since then it has become 4,700 people who will be receiving, again, retention bonuses. And those negotiations in September of 2008 were negotiations those bonus approvals happened with the intimate involvement of the New York Fed. Well, who was in charge of the New York Fed back in September?
Well, Geithner.
Geithner. So Geithner knows about this other set of bonuses because he was there when they were negotiating them. And you know, it's not clear whether Elijah Cummings, who's a representative from Maryland, has been trying to chase this down. And, of course, nobody will tell him. I'm hoping he's not on the committee where Geithner will be testifying tomorrow, but last I heard he was planning on attending. And, you know, the other thing the Wall Street Journal got wrong today is they said they're paying these bonuses because they legally have to, because they're contractually obliged to. And
right.
Anybody in Michigan who has seen their UAW neighbor get their contract completely renegotiated as a condition of GM or Chrysler getting any more money from the federal government, or anybody in Michigan who has seen their CEO go before Congress and promise that no executives, no white-collar workers would be getting bonuses any time until we pay back all this money, know that that's simply not true. Know that the federal government is in a very heavy-handed way forcing a bunch of Michiganders and Ohioans and, you know, car workers left
absolutely
and right to renegotiate bonuses.
Huge, right, bonuses. Everything, contracts, pensions, everything, healthcare.
Nothing's on the table if you work for a car company, but apparently nothing's on the table if you work for a finance
because
company.
Because the sanctity of the contract, who cares?
Well, and it's not. I mean, that's what the Wall Street Journal is getting wrong, and that's what a lot of the coverage on this is getting wrong, and that's what Larry Summers is misrepresenting when he talks about this, and I suspect Geithner will tomorrow, too, is they keep saying, well, we can't because of the contracts. Again, they don't say that with the UAW, so we know that's not true. What they're really doing, and Obama actually admitted to this, is that the people who got the finance bonuses, so that's the $135 million from last week, they are still sitting on $1.6 trillion of garbage still. And we own them now, and mm-hmm. we don't want that garbage to explode all over the American citizens. And so they are basically holding us hostage. I used the analogy last mm-hmm. week that they'd wrapped themselves in Semtex vests and were threatening to ignite themselves. But Obama used.
Yeah, he must have read your blog. He did.
He basically said these guys are basically like terrorists, suicide bombers threatening to blow themselves up. Because if they blow themselves up, that's $1.6 trillion that goes out the window that we are now owners of. So that's the reason we're paying this bribery.
Well, all right, when we come back, I want to, you've really addressed, Marcy, the legality, you know, that whole idea, the legality aspect of it. You raised another very, very important point that I want to have people, as they discuss this, and this applies as we go forward, too. It's not just AIG, what was done then. I think these principles now that we've learned a lot of what's going on and the hypocrisy of this, we got to learn when the next round comes, what we shouldn't do so we don't do it again. 866-991-9927. Marcy Wheeler with Fire Dog Lake. Awesome, awesome blog is helping all of us deconstruct these bonuses, what they mean, bailouts. Because it's your money, right? How many times have we heard that? It's your money! For decades we've been hearing that. So we will get to that in your calls, too. So hang on the line if you're there. 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner Show. Masters of the Universe on Wall Street, the whiz kids who got us in this mess, and what they need, what do we need to do for them to get back out and participate and get this economy moving again on the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. Marcy Wheeler is with me from Fire Dog Lake, a terrific blogger and an Ann Arbor resident, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Tim Geithner this morning, unveiled his the plan, the bank plan, and he said, before we move on, this is about the bonuses and the need for the risk and reward of all of this. Because remember, that bill on the bonuses, AIG, it passed the House, it's going to the Senate. President Obama over the weekend said he was not inclined, he did not like the idea of trying to tax those bonuses to get them back. So the question is going to be, should he veto it? Or, I mean, if the House and the Senate pass it, is he going to veto that? Is he not going to veto that? Should he veto that? 866-991-9927, I'll put that out there. But Marcy, Geithner said, he talked about, you know, not rewarding people who don't deserve it, but he said we need to balance that basic objective that we not reward failure against the hugely important imperative that we get the financial system doing what it needs to do for the recovery. And we will find that balance, he says. We will work with Congress carefully to make sure we get to a point where we have an appropriate balance. I'm very confident we'll work through this. So that's the bigger argument out there, that now, since if we tax those bonuses back to get them back, that's 90% tax the House passed, that there's going to be no incentive whatsoever for anybody to partner with the government on this bank toxic asset program, bailout program, because they're all just going to be so worried that Congress is going to do the same thing that no one will participate. What does your gut say that Geithner, because he's a Wall Street guy, head of the New York Fed, you think he's chummy with them? Or is he really saying, look, these guys have to make a ton of money or they're not going to put their money into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things are going on. I mean, yeah, he's chummy with these people. And not only is he chummy with them, but he doesn't get that there's an entire economy out there that doesn't live on Wall Street. And so he doesn't see that what we need is financing to small businesses and financing to mom-and-pop organizations all around the country. We don't necessarily need J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and AIG. We don't. I mean, those institutions don't inherently have value, but because he comes out of the culture of the Fed, that's what he knows. That's how he knows the economy to work. And the other thing that...
But he is right in that. I mean, to get the credit flowing again, that's the thing. To get the credit to everybody, to Main Street, the banks have to start lending again. So,
right,
I mean...
But it doesn't have to be these huge banks. I mean, there are a ton of small and medium-sized banks that did not invest in garbage, and they're reasonably healthy right now, and they'd be happy to lend money, and they have been lending money, and they don't have all of this toxic stuff on their books. And there is a choice that he is making to fund Wall Street as opposed to fund more localized banks or to fund, you know, the auto companies directly when they get creamed because of what happened on Wall Street. So there are alternatives. There are two other things that he's trying to avoid, though. And one is, you know, there's been all this discussion about too big to fail. And rather than saying, and this is the fault of Congress as well as Geithner and everybody else, but rather than saying, well, fine, let's cut these companies up and let's, you know, reenact the Glass-Steagall Act that prevented these companies from getting too big to fail,
right,
and that prevented
Amen,
these companies
sister. Yeah, I've been
from,
talking about that forever, right.
So rather than doing that, you know, they're saying, okay, let's invent a new regulator, this systemic risk regulator, which is based on the assumption that we're going to continue to let these companies get too big to fail and assume that the regulators can prevent this kind of massive collapse again. So, I mean, one of the reasons we had to pay bonuses at AIG to not just the Masters of the Universe, but to their insurance people now, this is the 4,700 that I was talking about, is because if those insurance people go to competitors, which they can, then the insurance side is going to crash, and that's the only thing that's keeping, I mean, it's all very technical, but anyway, you know, now we have to start paying huge bonuses to the rest of the company because the whole thing's too big to fail, and we've got to keep the rest of it healthy long enough so that we can saw it off and make a profit off of it.
I'm not buying the whole retention bonus need, okay, because these were the guys that sunk the company. So why do we need to give bonuses to the people to retain them? If they want to go get another job somewhere else, there are plenty of smart people out there that can move into those positions without that high-priced bonus and unwind, like you said, unwind instruments that have proven to be their downfall and or build lines, you know, separate them and build lines of business that are going to be sustainable in the future. So the whole retention thing to me seems ludicrous.
Well, the other thing I was going to get to, which she is really trying very hard to avoid, is nationalization. You nationalize AIG, you're the manager, you can then say, we're just going to cut off this stuff. We are going to say, because AIG is broke, that, you know, Morgan Stanley doesn't get bought out of the bets they made with AIG, which they knew were garbage, you know, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. They just lose that money. We can say that when we nationalize the companies, but Geithner doesn't want to nationalize these companies, you know, and I think there's a lot of reasons he doesn't want to nationalize them. I think
How do you know that he doesn't? Because I've heard Obama say that, like, everything's on the table.
Yeah, but they have said repeatedly, oh, no, we're not. I mean, in fact, Obama has said that they're not going to nationalize. Geithner is even more afraid of it.
They use different words, though. They don't use the word nationalize because it's so loaded. But I do. I have heard some language, Marcy, in there that's like, well, temporary what guardianship or I forget the word, but it was essentially, you know, use what word you want to. I agree with you, and I have from the moment this stuff happened. I said, because how are we going to trust these guys to come clean on their assets and what they have? We're trying to figure out which are toxic, which aren't. They're going to cherry pick the heck out of this and play us unless we have complete control over the books, complete transparency, take the bad actors, broom them away, clean them up, sell whatever has to be done.
And that's where I think the discussion on the bonuses should be. Is that, and that's why I think they're not a shiny object. And especially I think they always should be, and I hope Gary Peters and Thad McCotter, who will be in that hearing tomorrow, hear this from their constituents who are listening. But that's why I think you have to keep coming back to the auto bailout. The things that the government is demanding in the auto bailout all should be the kinds of things that get demanded of these Wall Street companies.
And we'll make sure that is loud and clear. We're going to continue with that thought. I'm up against my clock. Marcy Wheeler, it's great to have you on. Come back and join us often.
Thank you, Nancy.
We like smart, funny Aries. Thanks, Marcy. All right, you bet. Marcy Wheeler, Fire Dog Lake. I'm going to give you my take on this plan. I didn't do it. My dumb analogy coming up next on The Nancy Skinner Show. Going on to be talking about here on the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. A lot of confusing economic global meltdown stuff that I have to deconstruct and regurgitate in a way that's inane but understandable. Essentially, that's what I do. 866-991-9927. Today, the markets are reacting with glee. Actually, Wall Street is with the details of the announcement of Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner's plan, in which, here it is, okay? A lot of bad institutions, banks, have a lot of toxic assets. So what we're going to do, the New York Times is reporting that we would give them very favorable terms, okay, to potential investors. Have I got a toxic asset for you? And The government will essentially loan private investors up to 95% of the money for an investment. Sound familiar? Like, no money down. Cheap interest rates. Subprime mortgage. Here's so we're going to get them to help buy some of these assets to, and get them off the books of banks, so the banks then feel as if they can start lending again because they're not going to be weighted so heavily. Okay. Here's what... Well, let me bring Carl Jeffers into the program. I was going to set this up, but I'll set it up for Carl, and then I can get Carl's take and your take at 866-991-9927. Carl Jeffers is a contributor to the Seattle Times. He's a nationally renowned television, political commentator, radio talk show host, lecturer, speaker, consultant. And what am I missing, Carl Jeffers?
I would only add Huffington Post, because I did a piece just this past week on the earmarks that's gotten quite a bit of a response, so we should include them.
Yeah, the Huffington Post, my good friends at the Huffington Post.
That's right. They sure are your good friends, Nancy. That's right. Good to be with you today.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you. Okay, so I'm trying to work my way through this, and as I think about this plan, here's the thing with it that I would want to be, if I were Tim Geithner, and who would want to be Tim Geithner right now, frankly? Come on. He's testifying tomorrow. You know that's going to be, he's going to need a little Pepto-Bismol. One, here's my concerns about it. And I have been, obviously, my audience knows, Carl, I am President Obama's biggest cheerleader out there because, I ran against him, know him, believe in him. But here's what I would say about this program. It's better than the first idea that was floated, I think, during the end of the Bush administration was, all right, take the, just buy the toxic assets off their books. That's what they wanted. My equation there was that's just like buying a used lottery ticket that was a loser. You know, the date had expired. It was not a winning ticket. For the taxpayer, that's a loser. This public-private partnership thing, where we loan them nearly 95% to do this, to take these risks, is a little more like, well, the lottery hasn't taken place yet. But probably a better analogy now is, as I was thinking about it, my auto analogy, it's probably like a used car lot. Because we don't really know. If someone said you get to buy a used, you know, this whole lot of used cars, or, you know, there's two different lots of used cars, you can buy one lot or the other. My concern would be, but you can't go in and inspect the vehicles. You know, you can't start them up. You can't see which one's running, which one doesn't. So really, there can be no cherry picking. So in other words, if I'm a bank, I'm going to agree to sell you, the government, the crappiest cars I've got, right?
Uh-huh.
Right? And so there can't be cherry picking. Well, how do you prevent that? I think we're back to the idea of nationalization. Number two, those assets are going to be more valuable if they fix the underlying problems. And if they're mortgage-backed securities, the housing bill has to be passed because then they're going to be more valuable. If you're taking a gamble on this car, you want to know that someone got oil changes every 3,000 miles. Okay? You got to fix the thing to make them more attractive. And so Wall Street loves this right now. The markets are rallying. They think this is going to solve all their problems. If I were the president, I would say, look, here's the deal. We will do this because it does have, they have to start lending again under two conditions. One, we actually do have to have your books. We have to go in and we are the ones deciding our auditors are deciding which assets are going to be in this program. And two, you have to support the housing bill. You call up, you lobby your whoever it is you talk to, and everybody, it's a one done deal. In other words, you know, that we got something that they want right now, so they're going to have to take what we want, and everyone just shuts up. What do you think about that?
I think two different levels. First, in terms of the two conditions that you want, the second condition I think that they'll be able to get. I think they could, in fact, extract a commitment to support the housing bill. The first condition that you want, I think it's a great condition. I don't think it's realistic because I think the banks themselves would object. They want to have control over what they dump. Frankly, and they are going to, the reason why they don't want to accede to outside auditing is because they want to dump absolutely the crappiest, and they want to be able to set what the value will be. But the bigger question for me, though, Nancy, goes to the first point you made, which was that your original objection to the original plan that the government just essentially set up as kind of a bad bank and take the assets directly was that it was essentially a losing proposition. But the irony is that theory doesn't change with the new mechanism. So if it was a losing proposition then, it would be a losing proposition now. See, I look at it the other way, that I think that it's long-term a plus proposition, and as a result...
A long-term, it's a what, Carl? Say that again?
It's a plus. I think it's a plus. It's a gain proposition, because if you can hold on to those assets long enough, if you fix the underlying problem, many of those assets will regain value at least to the point to enable you to break even or to have some kind of market value benefit. And if that's the case, then why not have the government and the taxpayers take the long-term benefit instead of essentially many of the private investors who got us into the problem in the beginning? And they will now, the same investors who put many of these books, these assets on the books of these banks, will now be the ones to form the syndications that will put the investment money together to buy those assets and hold on to them long enough until the economy does revive, and it absolutely will revive, and until the stimuluses are there that will enable those properties to be worth something. And I'm saying if that's the long-term approach and Wall Street likes that approach, they would have also liked it if the government had done it, and then we, the taxpayers, the government itself, would have had the actual benefit that it might be 7, 8, 9, 10 years, but if it's going to be that long, then let us get some of it back.
Well, we do. We do get some of it back. I mean, that's the thing. It's a partnership, and that what you're doing is you're trying to spread the risk out a little bit between the private sector and the public sector, and we're just inducing them to put some money in this game. And if it was just the government, here's where it gets complicated. These assets, it depends on what the basket of assets are.
We have a good idea though of what much of them are, Nancy. And the reality is that if the government's going to essentially guarantee up to 95%. That's a partnership, but that's kind of like the old, general partner and silent partner, kind of a passive investor with an active operating partner as opposed to a joint venture. Because that's what would have been more palatable to me if it was truly a joint venture, almost kind of half and half or 51-49. But this is not going to be that. This is going to be the investors doing the operating. They will do the transactions. They will make the deal. But the risk will be taken essentially by the 5% guarantee that the government's providing.
Well, okay, I understand what you're saying, Carl, but here's the deal. This is not just a business venture for the United States. It's not like we're just looking at this as if we would look at any business venture. We have an interest. The primary interest is to get the credit flowing again so that people can buy cars from Detroit lots of other stuff. Homes and cars.
The cars are available from.
Right. Which I'm going to get to because I believe that if, it, in fact, you know, all these ridiculous reports, we're going to get to the story about how what J.P. J.P. Morgan Chase spends millions on new jets and luxury airport hangar. And the government's outsourcing now for Chinese condoms.
It gets more ridiculous every day.
But now
it really does.
My point is this, is that anyone who receives a dollar of this financing, any company, needs to be buying an American vehicle. I'll tell you that right now.
I agree with that.
Put that on the table. All right, so are you, do you have a second to stay?
Okay, yes, I can.
Carl Jeffress will stay with us. And my last point we didn't get to. So we will. 866-991-9927 is the number to the program. I know, if your head is spinning because of this, it's okay. It means you're normal. You are allowed to laugh. Yes, Steve Croft, people are allowed to laugh. Even though we're supposed to want to kill ourselves, we can laugh in the process because life will go on. Actually, there's good news. Good signs coming out of Wall Street, housing, all kinds of good stuff is finally happening. This is the last big hurdle. We're going to deal with it right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. We are going to Greece now. I'm not traveling from there. Is 9 years old, he's the child of my first marriage. I've reason to believe we both will be received. Great. Okay, here's the fight of the day. The fight of the day is this. Wall Street's happy. Yay, woo! Geithner announces a plan to save the banks from their own bad decisions. And it's how much you're willing to do. What are you willing to do to buy these assets, essentially? It's the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. Carl Jeffers, a nationally syndicated radio host, not nationally syndicated, Seattle-based host, but Huffington Post poster and regular pundit on television, I see, my fellow TV head, talking head, is with me to talk about this. And before we do, I have a point here I want to make, but let's get Alan in before we move off the foreclosure thing. Alan in Orange County has a quick thought on this plan. Hi, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
My point was that somewhere between 20% and 30% of all the mortgages in the country are underwater or where the mortgage is worth more than the property, and it may cost more than $100,000 in California, at least, to just leave your property. And these are the toxic assets, or at least they should be. And,
right.
But what's going to happen if they sell these things? Is there any guarantee that the people who are, you know, buying the house or paying on the mortgage are going to get any benefit out of it? Or are they going to reprice the mortgage, in other words?
So, wait a minute. So, all right.
That's a little mistake there, just for our listeners, Nancy. Just a correction. The toxic assets
are the securities, not the mortgages themselves.
Not the mortgages. And certainly they are not the mortgages that represent American families who are just underwater. There are a lot of American families underwater who actually are current with their mortgages and in homes in which the value, in fact, will come back very quickly, but it's still, because of the economic deterioration, they owe more on the house than the house is currently worth. That's different from a toxic asset.
Right. I
would disagree that the house is going to bounce back. In California, the bubble prices were really high, and that's where most of the houses are that have been changing place over the last 5 years or so. I really don't think that the houses should come back or will come back for another 5-10 years.
That's the whole thing.
Wait, okay, guys, you're talking.
The only thing we're disagreeing about is that it's not a question that they won't come back. There has never been in the historical economic cycle of American history a period where they don't come back. The question is when. You just said first that I don't think they'll ever come back. Then you said it's going to be 5 or 10 years. And that's really the issue, is the question of how long it will take. But they will come back.
I don't know, Carl, if I would even grant that that bubble, the height of the housing values, that we will come back to that. I think that in certain cities on the coasts and different places, it was so outrageous that it was, I don't think there is a...
That's the point, Nancy. We don't need it to come back to that because it was so outrageous. You had people who could afford to be at a $400,000 home. They were able to, because of the times, they were able to qualify for a $700,000 home with no money down. So they were quickly underwater, but that original home would probably come back to being worth $400,000, $450,000. It's never going to be worth the $700,000, which was enabling people to send their husbands to Vegas for the weekend to buy two homes for them to flip in 6 months. That kind of thing is not coming back, and thank God it won't.
Well, this is my point. Now we go back, we'll full circle back to my point about this buying these assets. So much depends on if the rest of the stuff is done. If the housing bill passes to stabilize the downward spiral in housing values, and if the stimulus bill won and we need another one and we need the year's appropriation to go through, because that money will get the economy going so that the incomes, you look at any, like, is it a troubled asset? Well, you have to look at somebody's income and you have to look at their housing value to gauge that property. And both of those. So that's why Obama should be saying, look at Wall Street, look at Congress. This all has to be done all at the same time. And if Wall Street wants us to go buy or participate or lend them the money to do that, and I don't have a problem with that, because we don't want to be, the government themselves does not want to be the holders like you think, that they should be the ones flipping the properties and making the buck, then let you make the money, but this is what you're going to have to swallow. You are supporting my housing bill to get to stabilize those prices, and you are supporting my stimulus so that people have money to buy those houses, and then there will be a balance and everyone will be happy. But I wouldn't cut any deal.
The reason why Obama is not saying that is because to either Paul Volcker, Chrissy Roma, then none of them are telling him that he has to say that because they all are fearful that that will jeopardize the ultimate passage. And if they're not telling him he has to say that, he frankly doesn't have that kind of experience to feel that strongly about it himself. And that's why he's trying to surround himself with outstanding advice.
Rod, you're a radio host. You know what out of time means. Carl Jeffers,
yeah,
thanks.
Right.
Hey, it was great. Come back and join me anytime, okay?
I'd love to, Nancy. Good to be with you today.
Thanks. Great. That's Carl Jeffers. He's a political analyst. I don't think he's on the left. 866-971 or 991-9927, the number to the program. When we get back, we'll have a Republican strategist take on us. Fair and balanced on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Skeptical. And I think more people need to come forward and to ask for him to step down or resign so we can bring someone in that's got the skill set and that the American people can have confidence in to get our economy moving.
And you say someone there, who would you like? And if you don't have a name, what type of person? Because he comes with great credentials. This Timothy Geithner, a lot of people saying he's a really sharp guy. So do you have a name or what type of guy who has a different background than Geithner does and experience than Geithner would you like to see?
Well, I think, again, this is something that the president will have to look into and make that nomination and go through the Senate process. That's one of the responsibilities of the president. But we clearly need someone who's got the skills to handle the job and who can instill confidence in the American people and the taxpayers. And in my opinion, Tim Geithner is not the person.
He's not the person. Did you want him to resign before this whole AIG mess about these bonuses really came down hard last week? Did you want him to go before that, or was that the last straw?
Well, I was disappointed in his confirmation in the first place, to be honest. And I also, and then everything after that, kind of leading up to AIG, just kept eroding this confidence that people have in him. And I think that later on today you're going to see a press conference where the president is now going to have to come out and hold his hand at a press conference to try to regain some of that confidence.
Well, you say hold his hand there.
Put some.
Yeah, isn't that what the president should be doing, what maybe American people should be doing, maybe what members of Congress should be doing, is showing some confidence and support. And also, it's only been 60-plus days. Should we give the guy a little more time? Should you give him a little more time maybe for some of his plans to maybe try to work?
Again, I think we need to have someone that the American people can have confidence in, and the American people do not have confidence in Tim Geithner. And the president now having to come to his rescue and hold his hand, you would rather have someone in who can stand on his own two feet and navigate this economy to a growing economy. And we're just not seeing that right now.
And not seeing it. We heard from the president on 60 Minutes last night. And you talk here that we might see another one of these moments today with the president, as you say, holding his hand.
All right. See, that's how a talking point is made, my friends. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927. My favorite interview of the day. That CNN reporter just handed the rear of Florida Congressman Connie Mack right back at him as the congressman was calling for the resignation of Tim Geithner because in his words, he needs to have his hand held. You know, when you hear it three times, it's a talking point. And he's like, well, he's only been in office for 6 days. How do you know he doesn't have the confidence of the American people to state with certainty? So who would you have? I don't know. Just want him to resign. Yet another floundering voice from the right trying to figure out how to handle this financial mess, if you ask me. John Boehner has voted against the taxing the AIG bonuses. Russia's pro-AIG. Michael Steele's gone. I guess his heyday's over. No one knows quite how to handle the economic crisis, and Tim Geithner seems just like a good punching bag. Because he needs so much hand-holding. 866-991-9927 is the number of the program. As promised, a GOP side of it, fair and balanced here. Jack Berkman, very well-known. Jack Berkman has been he's a GOP strategist, but appeared on all the network shows. Former Fox News political analyst and a regular contributor to ABC's Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. And we're happy to have Jack with us today. Hi, Jack.
Nancy, good to be with you. Thanks for the build-up. You should go into agenting.
Into what?
You should be an agent. Thank you for the build-up.
Well, hey, you know what? That's what we do here. It's radio, right? So, well, Jack, well, we've been talking about all this all day. Obviously, some of this stuff is really complex. We follow it quite closely here on the Nancy Skinner program. Before we get into the sort of the party politics behind all this, what's going on, the inside baseball,
Yes. What
is your take of the plan, since Wall Street is reacting well, they're happy. So is that, now how do you deal with that? If Wall Street's happy, does that mean you're happy?
Well, no. I mean, Wall Street has become like a bunch of welfare moms looking for their next hit. I'm ashamed that Wall Street's part of our country, to be honest with you. I mean, let me make some news. I'll give you some controversy. I mean, there's nothing wrong. It's a recession. You know, you had almost 20 years of growth. Now you have a slowdown, maybe 5 or 6 points lost in GDP before it's all over. Maybe unemployment hits 10%. So what? This is the business cycle. This is a free enterprise system. This is what happens. You don't run around like chickens with your heads cut off, and as my mother used to say, and go out and spend $4 or $5 trillion to make people feel good. There is no problem.
There is no problem.
It's a recession.
All right, now, Jack, all right, so listen. What's the difference between a recession and a near depression? If 45%, let me throw you a couple things out here. If 45% of the world's wealth evaporated, as the Blackstone Equity Group just reported last week, fully 45% of the world's wealth evaporated in a year and a half. You have housing markets in some places down 40%. The Warren Buffett says the economy has fallen off a cliff. Took a 6.2% decline in GDP. The credit has frozen. The banks, that's the problem. The banks have so many toxic assets that there's no credit flowing to. I'm in Detroit, Jack. You're telling Detroit that there's not a problem. If you said there's no problem in Detroit.
Detroit is. Well, we're not talking about Detroit, but markets go up and markets go down. This is what happens. I mean, in the blink of an eye, you close your eyes, the market goes up, it goes down. Close your eyes, look at it in 6 years, and you'll probably have a good result. There's no wealth lost. This is what markets do. The government can't come in and manage everyone's 401k. People are losing wealth in their own minds because they're watching CNBC and they're watching Bloomberg and they're watching this stuff and they think they're losing money.
Did you just say that people are losing wealth only in their own minds?
Only in their own minds.
That is infamous. Who said something like that? It was under Bush's guy who said, it's a mental recession. Was that Bill Graham?
You're not
John McCain?
You're not concerned about the street. You're concerned, as you should be, with your ideology about the average person. The average person shouldn't be playing the stock market to the extent that he's playing the stock market, trading equities on a daily basis and worrying about daily valuations. He should be buying and holding and taking a glance at it every 5 years or so. If he does it that way, there's no panic at all.
But you're just talking about stocks, Jack. Here's the problem. The real world out there, if you said this, listen, my listeners, and not even just in Detroit, but
unemployment's only 8%, Nancy. You know, compared to the Great Depression, you had FDR faced unemployment north of 25% when he took office. It's 8%. That's it.
Yeah, but look at how long it took from 29 to 33, from the stock market crash to the point where it got there, because we did not have in place the ability to respond. And right now, I would say to you, if you say it's just about the stock market going up and down, no, it's about people losing their jobs. It's about their housing values going down, going underwater, and the banks aren't giving money a credit, so people can't start new businesses, and they can't buy cars.
It's called a recession. If every time you have a recession like this, the government's going to come out and spend $3, $4, $5 trillion, run the debt, run up taxes, the system you will have is called socialist France or socialist Sweden, where you have very little upside, very little downside, and everything goes along at a nice pace, so nobody loses, and nobody has to worry, and everybody's taken care of and happy. You can have a system like that. Maybe that's what you want. But that's not America.
Jack, but Jack, if this were a regular recession, as you allege, then you know, a smart guy, you know how to deal with that with monetary policy. So the Fed lowered interest rates 11 times. It's down to zero. That's how you know this is not your grandfather's recession.
No, but when you
we have no other instruments to use but fiscal stimulus or to let this interdependent economy completely collapse and have mayhem.
If you look at a broad composite of numbers, it's probably about as severe as the early 80s, probably not quite as much.
No.
Because you've got unemployment then was running 11, 12, 13%, and it's still 8.1% or less than that. That's even high. That's sort of the numbers that CNN's throwing around. So,
If AIG, back in the 80s, was AIG and Citigroup were international financial companies of that Merrill Lynch, were they going bankrupt?
No, listen.
Not even close.
I joined AIG. They're nothing but a bunch of gamblers. That was a house of bookies that were, you know, they use words like reinsurance, but it's nothing but bookies taking bets and laying off and doing the things that bookies do. The problem is that Bernanke and the Federal Reserve, and look, Bush got involved with this too with TARP. He never should have done it. The government should have stayed out. You let AIG go broke. The following morning, you have four or five new insurance companies spring up, take the business. This is how the market works. You don't coddle these gamblers. These are bookies and gamblers. You don't coddle them. AIG could have just as easily been betting on the New England Patriots. You don't coddle these people. You let these institutions, Citibank, run by the biggest pack of idiots known to modern man. You let these companies go broke.
Hey, Jack, are you able to come back and tell me who's going to lead your team?
I would love it, Nancy. I'm ready to go to the hills. I think I'm ready to go to the hills and form my own organization here. I think I don't think we have any leadership in Washington.
Okay.
I think we're out of leadership in Washington, and
I gotta break here. When we come back, though, I am going to put some names your way, and you can tell me if you think that there's any hope in any of those names. Jack Berkman is with me. You can join this conversation at 866-991-9927. He says it's just an ordinary recession, and he's gonna try and figure out. They don't know. They have of two different, three different, four different minds on the other side of the aisle. I'm pretty clear about where I am. On the Nancy Skinner Show. How much of a believer are you? You want to buy some toxic assets? I got some for sale. It's the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927, the number to the program. Jack Berkman is with me. He's a GOP strategist and pollster, and we were just discussing whether Jack thinks this is just a normal recession, not anything greater, just your average business cycle. Before, Jack, because I want to talk about the lack of leadership on this issue in particular with you, but you know, I would have to just summarize this when you said we're like in the 80s. Back in the Great Depression, you had GDP declines of like 33%. The closest we came was, I did my homework over the break, is in 73 to 75, we lost 5% GDP. In the last quarter, we've already lost 6.2% in one quarter. In one quarter.
Well, but the total loss in this recession to date is probably less than 3% GDP. That's it. That's all you've lost.
In one quarter, we lost 6.2% in the last quarter alone.
You didn't lose 6%. That's projected. That's not true. You're projecting the loss on an annualized basis. What that means is if you lose the way you lost in the previous quarter, the economy for the year will lose 6.2%. It could happen, but it's very unlikely. Even if that happened, though, let's assume that happens. It won't, but say it does. And say this continues for 2 years. That would mean your total loss would be something like 12% compared with, I don't know, what, 80% in the 30s during the Great Depression, 90%? It's a fraction.
Well, but we're adding into this. We're adding into whatever the loss of economic growth and activity and unemployment. We're adding banks freezing up, the global nature of all this, the interconnected nature of all this. But Dennis wants, Dennis, I'm going to let Dennis hop in on this point because then I want to get to leadership. So Dennis in Buffalo, you have a thought on recession versus depression, Dennis?
Well, what it is I want to take a shot back at the Republican when they had the gall to take a shot at Gartner for, they say, his qualification. That don't forget, the financial advisor to Senator McCain when he was running against Obama was wonderful Bill Graham, who got us into this mess. Remember, in 1999, he was the chair of the Senate Banking Committee, and then he flushed through to destroy the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act, and which was put in place by FDR to protect us from what we are just going through today.
Right.
That was to keep.
And that was Phil Graham's work.
That's right. And that was to keep, basically, to keep the banks, the insurance companies, and these.
None of that. Your caller is misinformed. Glass-Steagall, I actually worked on that on the Hill in the 90s. Glass-Steagall has nothing to do with what's going on today. AIG and Citibank, what they were doing was gambling.
But Jack, that's the reason we can't let them fail. But the reason we can't let them fail is because of the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, which put a firewall between banks and financial companies and insurance companies. Now they are so intertwined that our money, our federal government.
What I would say is this: I think it's very appropriate that the government insures your deposits. If banks fail, yes, you're entitled, and I think raising it to 250 was a good thing. If the bank fails, yes, you pay off all of the depositors like Bush 41 did. That's perfectly fine. We're going way beyond that to now running the financial system. We're not only
because of the repeal of that act, Jack. Now those companies, the banks own derivatives and credit default swaps because we allowed them to get into that.
People.
So that's why we're all screwed.
Can't stop people from gambling. If Citibank wants to gamble, whether Glass-Steagall's repealed or whether it's in place, it's going to gamble. Whether it bets on credit default swaps and derivatives or whether it bets on the New England Patriots, when you get to that level of gambling, all you're doing is gambling.
I agree. I think you and I agree on that point, right? But here's the problem. You just said that the bank should be, that we should protect those deposits, and that's legitimate. And then you said you can't stop people from gambling. So what you have to do is say banks can't gamble because we do. Now, if you want companies, they want to create, derivatives in coconut futures, whatever, that's fine. But they can't be owned by the banks that we are banking.
What you have to ask yourself is, what's the harm? Let's say the government had let Citibank and AIG go broke. So Citi goes broke, you step in, pay the depositors off, secure the accounts at Smith Barney, step away from it, split off the assets. The next day, what happens? Everybody talks about it.
You know why? You know what happens?
I don't think there's a meltdown.
You know why? Because I'll tell you why. Because the banks that are now doing business with AIGs and Citigroups of the world, one bank can fail. We have right now, if they don't have they don't write a check for $500 billion, FDIC doesn't have enough money. They've had 18 bank failures last year, 25 so far. There is not enough money for us to bail out all those banks because they all go down like dominoes.
No. Look, it would be very, that's not true. For what the government's spending now, even if you had massive bank collapse, paying off depositors at the rate guaranteed by the law would be cheap. It would be a fraction of what we're spending now for all this nonsense. I mean, but you have to understand how crazy this is. I presume you supported TARP when it came in October, or maybe you're a liberal, so you would be kind of half and half on it. But, I mean, TARP, they haven't even spent all of the TARP money. You have to understand what's going on.
I don't support the first TARP because they had absolutely no, it was just a gift.
Okay, only about half the money is spent. Geithner today is pumping out, it's complicated, but he's literally doubling the size of TARP.
But it's a different thing. Jack, I'm out of time. I only have 30 seconds left for my hard break, but I want you to come back. We'll finish this discussion.
Yes, we got to finish it.
Jack Berkman, give me one name of someone who's going to help you guys.
Oh, God, I don't like Eric Cantor. Maybe Paul Ryan. If he didn't want to run for the Senate, maybe they could pump him up in the House, but I don't know.
All right, well, we'll have to have you back to have that discussion. So, because we didn't even get there. Thanks so much, Jack Berkman, GOP strategist, pollster on, or whatever. We'll let you jump in this next segment, 866-991-9927, right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. Alrighty then, talk about getting screwed. I kid you not, U.S. to buy Chinese condoms, ending Alabama jobs. No pun, pun was actually quite intended in that. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. Let me do the build-up here, okay? We got the long-awaited Treasury bad asset plan. I love one blog post on CNN said, anything that has the word toxic in it sounds like a winning plan to me, that Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, unveiled today. Here's the big concern. This is why there's hearings tomorrow with Geithner and Bernanke, and the AIG thing is still alive. Because what David Gergen and others, another CNN contributor, is saying is, listen, if there's lynch mob mentality, if they're going to go tax those bonuses and get them back, then we're not going to sucker enough of these guys, even though we're giving them 95% of the money to buy what could be very lucrative assets once we finally pass a stimulus bill, a housing bill. So we're like enticing them. But if you go ahead and tax those bonuses, nobody's going to want to do it. And I'm starting to put this in perspective, like, okay, wait a minute. Our taxpayer dollars, all right, I understand why we have to do it. ABC News story this morning, J.P. Morgan Chase to spend millions on new jets and luxury airport hangar, okay? It's getting harder and harder to handle. Now, J.P. Morgan has received $25 billion in TARP funds, but they're going ahead with their plans to build to buy two planes, two luxury corporate jets. Each cost $138 on both of them. I stand corrected. They call them the premier corporate. Oh no, this is the airport hangar. The premier corporate aircraft hangar on the eastern seaboard is where they're going to house them. So there are two Gulfstream planes, $120 million for two planes, and $138 million for the hangar. Okay, did we get that? Plus an $18 million. Lavish renovation of that hangar. So that's a lot of dough that J.P. Morgan is going to spend. Citibank was reported last week spent about $10 million on their CEO's office, a new office, because they said it was a part of their worldwide space-saving arrangement. All right. And then I saw this. So this is a stimulus. There's a pun intended there. U.S. to buy Chinese condoms, ending Alabama jobs. This is Mike McGraw wrote about this in the Kansas City Star. Call it a condom conundrum. At a time when the federal government is spending billions of stimulus dollars to stem the tide of U.S. layoffs, should that same government put even more Americans out of work by buying cheaper foreign products? In this case, Chinese condoms. One, I mean, that word alone. You do not want cheap when it comes to condoms. That's the dilemma that apparently the USAID has decided to move a contract with a company in Alabama. This company, Alitech is their name, who have been, they've been doing this for providing these condoms for many years. It's going to cost 300 American jobs. They've distributed an estimated 10 billion U.S.-made AIDS-preventing condoms to poor countries throughout the world. They're doing it because they're cheaper, 2 cents versus more than 5 cents for the U.S.-made condoms. And, according to a spokesperson at the agency, the fact that Congress dropped the Buy American language in a recent appropriation bill. We talked about that here, right, in the stimulus package. Remember all the Buy American provisions and how all those people got on and said how, you know, how bad that would be to do that, that protectionist policies would lead us to a depression again? So they are now going to buy Chinese condoms. Now, so here, I put these two things together, folks. We're trying to get the president of this company. I just talked to his partner. They're outraged. So we're going to get the president of Alitech on the phone who lost his condom contract. But I'm looking at all this lavish spending going on, all this, you know, new Gulfstream jets, new offices, bonuses to AIG. Now, you know, companies like this, these are all taxpayer dollars, okay? Especially with the taxpayer dollars. I would say, I'm going to put this on the table, see how you feel about it. 866-991-9927. That to get Main Street going again, to get housing values going again, I keep talking about this. We have an aggregate demand problem. It's demand. People need to make more money here so they can buy more stuff. That's how the economy comes back. I would start a, if I were in Congress, had I succeeded, I would have been the lead sponsor of a bill that said anyone receiving any TARP money, any bailout funds, stimulus funds at this point, anyone getting a bailout, if you were going to buy a car, if in the course of business, Citibank, JP Morgan Chase, any of these players are buying anything, any fleets of vehicles or paying for cars in any way, that those cars be American cars. And yeah, I wouldn't limit it just to cars, but that is a starter. Just to simplify this, those cars, because this is the problem. When they, now they're outsourcing, someone called the other day and said that they heard that Citigroup was outsourcing a lot of their TARP money, to how they were going to fix their company, to India. So this is about getting the American economy back on track. Why not? It's as simple as this. Anyone getting TARP funds, okay, they must buy an American car. And, you know, if you want to put the fuel efficiency thing in there so that there is a market for those, the Chevy Volts of the world and the Ford Fusion, all the advanced technology, then fine. That's good. That's better because you create the market and the demand. But, you know, enough is enough. They are trying to say we have to give these bonuses to the AIG executives who tanked the company. And this tax that went through the House, all of a sudden they're losing traction. Everyone's like, calm down now. Let's not take it out on the credit default swap guys, snake oil salesmen. Nope, they need their bonuses so that they can be retained, so they can keep doing what it is that tanked the company to begin with. And yes, if Citigroup has to spend $10 million on a new office for one CEO, and if they, JP Morgan Chase needs money for two new jets and a luxury airport hangar, fine, we have to do that because that's business, but yet they can't specify that these companies all need to buy American cars so that we can start selling. That's 20%, right? I've said this many times, but if you have not heard this number, of gross domestic product, it's 80% is consumer spending. That's 80%. 20% is related to the auto industry. You want a stimulus thing, any tax dollars that go, any bailout money that goes to any of these companies, they should be forced to buy American cars. New York City police are buying Nissan hybrids or something like that. Now they're outsourcing condoms to China, which to me does not sound like a good idea when we're talking about saving millions of lives, okay? Keep the jobs in Alabama. Keep the jobs in Detroit. Put conditions on this money. I don't care what sort of incentives you want to try and argue with me about, that these masters of the universe are worried that they're not going to have enough incentive, as if making, you know, $2 million a year is you know, just getting by. They have to make $20 million or they won't do it. Well, then fine. Okay, then fine. Then go get, pick up the want ads. 866-991-9927. Should we be outsourcing condom purchases to China or requiring our TARP dollars to go to help buy American vehicles? You're on the line. Hang on. I'm sorry. I had to set that one up. It was just a little crazy. I think so. I think if it's our dollars, we could put attach strings to this stuff, okay? This is not we give you money so you can go gamble. We give you money, we're going to fix the situation, but here's the deal. Here's the deal. It's called a deal. 866-991-9927. The number to the Nancy Skinner Show. Charlie writes in at NancySkinnerLive.com. Nancy, the thing about Chinese condoms is that 30 minutes after you use one, you want to again. I think that's a joke about Chinese food. You're hungry 30 minutes after eating it. All right, you're just joining us. My outrage is serious. Always it has been about Detroit and how all these companies are now spending lavish sums of money on jets and all this stuff. But we couldn't get a simple Buy American line in this thing, so to help start moving some of these cars and vehicles to help our economy. And now they're outsourcing condoms. Condoms that were made in Alabama are now going to be outsourced by USAID, protect millions of people worldwide to China. Okay? To China. Because they said that Congress dropped the Buy American language in the recent appropriations bill. That to me is just outrageous. Let's go to your calls. In Costa Mesa, Kevin, John says you're a condom connoisseur.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay. So then tell us what you think about that then.
Well, I'm a college student currently, and I rely heavily on condoms to not let me get an oops in my life. And I think that outsourcing something in China is going to bring the quality down. It's not going to help American economy at all. I think it's stupid, and whatever company does that, I'm going to stop using entirely. I hope everyone else does too.
Well, we're going to try and get the president on. He might join us at the bottom of the hour, but it's an American company that's lost a contract based in Alabama called Alitech, and I don't know who's making them over in China, but I would check the package, Kevin. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you calling. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. David is on the line. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hello, David. I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
I never thought I would have a reason for overwatching Fox News, but now I have a reason. So,
See how that works? And then how did I do?
You did great. I've seen you a couple times on air, and I just appreciate everything you have to contribute to what they're talking about. It's obviously the only one that makes any sense.
Hey, by the way, if you go to my website here and you sign up, if you go to my Facebook page and join the fan page, by the way, folks, then whenever I'm on one of these shows, you can get a little note so you can know when to tune in selectively to Fox News. And my website is going to have the same ability to it if you sign my mailing list, NancySkinnerLive.com. Okay, David, that way you don't have to sit there and just watch Fox all day. You can just tune me in when you know I'm on. How's that?
You bet. Thank you. I called mainly because I have been watching off and on for the last few days with all the outrage in the Congress trying to tax these individuals, and which I don't think is going to work. And one of the things that really stands out is that there's very little creativity at the level that these people are working from. And it would seem to me like as I understand these retention bonuses, they were to keep the individuals into the company, right?
In that unit, the financial products unit.
Right, right. Now, why would the people that left be entitled to a bonus?
That's a very good question.
And
they should be made to give their bonus back. And I understand that there have been, I guess the person that got the $6.2 million in a bonus, I understand he gave that back.
One guy did, yeah. I saw some reporting on that,
and a few others also. So why aren't they giving him some incentive to return the bonuses with some offer of reinstating the bonuses at a later date when they become profitable? If they were to stay on and help them get us out of this mess. Let's say the bonus would be put in kind of a lockbox or something with possible interest or something that would, make them...
Right, since the company lost $60 billion, what incentive I think they should have? It's called solvency, that we all band together as taxpayers and allowed them to keep a job so that they're not having to be thrown out on the street. That's the incentive I think that they should have, But you're right. That's the whole thing. That there's outrage. Like, well, if we don't go, the solution is, well, we can't take the money back. The money went out the door. The only way we can really get it back is to tax it. So the House passed a 90% tax. The Senate now is they want to change that percentage and lower that percentage. The president, I'm not sure which way he's going to go on it. Now Geithner's saying, well, got to have a balance here because you want these people to have the risk reward. You want the reward in there. You know, I'm just thinking the whole thing is the reward is these guys is a big Ponzi scheme. So as I said on Fox, if you saw my appearance, I said, it's like giving a guy with multiple DUIs, rewarding him with a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Yeah, right.
Right?
And the other thing is I've been thinking about Geithner and his position in all of this and that actually Obama has a genuine contact, somebody who's actually been on Wall Street. Now, you could take that both ways. They could say that maybe Geithner is there to make sure everything goes Wall Street's way, or vice versa, that Obama can keep track of what's happening on Wall Street through his connection there.
Yeah, I think, Geithner, like I said, having that experience, having been on Wall Street, is really important. He's an experienced guy. These calls for him to resign are ridiculous. That CNN reporter just nailed that. Who was it? Connie Mack. He's only been there 60 days. This guy has experience and background that so few people have. And the reason he's proposing this, I understand his reasoning, and a lot of it is, well, we got to get the credit markets flowing again for the sake of Main Street. But, enough is enough with the bonuses. I just can't, I can't cry in my soup over that, David. The difference, earlier going back to my GOP pollster, the difference between a recession and a depression, a recession is when your neighbor loses his job. A depression is when you lose your job. So that's the simple story. You got a job, okay? Forget the bonus. You're still working on our dime. Okay, that should be good enough for you. 866-991-9927, the number of the Nancy Skinner program. More of your calls are next. To their employees for the first time ever, okay, they publicly announced, hey, look at us, we're doing so well, right? Speaking, tying all this in with the Chinese workers and all the Chinese condoms and outsourcing it. So if you just missed that story, the USAID is now moving their condom purchases, which is for, AIDS, an AIDS program, something that our contributions to some worldwide AIDS program from Alabama to China, right? Because it's a little cheaper. And I'm looking at the story on CNBC where Goldman Sachs wants to sell off 5% of a stake it owns in a Chinese bank. But they might not be able to because just last week, China made it more difficult for foreign institutions to buy or sell blocks of stock in Chinese financial firms. It cited a need to protect national assets. So China's protecting their national interests, but we can't protect ours for some reason. It's okay to outsource condoms to China. It's okay. We couldn't ever tell J.P. Morgan Chase and these companies to buy American vehicles because it's in our national interest right now. On one hand, we're loaning the auto industry money to get them through. On the other hand, we're letting these guys go out and spend ridiculous sums. What's wrong with telling them they have to buy American-made vehicles? And Walmart, of all people, I mean, this the listen to this segment. I have time to play this. This was the story, $2 billion in bonuses. They hand out and do a press release. Like, we're all a bunch of idiots. And does this prove the premise on Fox News, where I fought, whatever, four other people, five, it's always me against everyone, was, see, companies do the right thing.
Cashing in. Walmart saying this week it'll hand out $2 billion to hourly employees. Now, JBL says this is proof that the nation's biggest private employer is good for workers, and it's just time for the unions to shut up.
Absolutely. Look, unions ruin the automakers. They ruin the airlines. They almost ruined baseball, which is impossible to do. Look, Walmart is great for America. It's great for our jobs. You look at small communities that are centered around Walmart. They're the second biggest employer next to the government. You go to Mexico, Walmart shows up. It is a big deal because they understand how important it is and how much of the economy it is.
Nance, is this just PR, though? I mean, this is the first time in 20 years they announced that they're going to give out bonuses.
Yeah, it's like going on a grapefruit diet to fit in your wedding dress, Tracy. Come on, people.
Hey! I think the lemonade diet.
It worked for me.
This is a preemptive strike so that the Employee Free Choice Act, that the Credit Act does not go through to say, look how great we are. And what's so ironic about it, it's the very fact that we've lost it. All this aggregate demand has been lost because of the Walmartization of the entire economy.
But
that's
but
why
it's real
we
money,
don't have
though,
enough demand,
right,
and supply. It's the
it's
reason
real money.
Why we're at.
Yeah. But it's real money. I mean, they're handing out real bonuses that are benefiting its real employees. The same employees,
right,
by the
to
way,
avoid,
who line up to get a job whenever they open.
Okay, I went on to say in that segment, later in the segment, that it was, in fact, this is the company, how great Walmart is. This is the same company that actually distributed a memo telling people how they could apply for welfare. Public assistance, get on the public dole. Now, when there's a threat that perhaps it'll be a little easier to unionize, they're going to have this preemptive strike, hand out $2 billion and make a big deal out of it. But here's what you need to know. This is why, to me, the irony, this business is so fun. 866-991-9927. The irony of this whole China thing, okay? I'm picking on China. Call it Chindia. Call it what it's going to be, Chad next. Whatever. Cheap labor. This race to the bottom is that Walmart lowered prices, drove Main Street out of business because they outsourced most of their stuff from China. Low wage, no, environmental laws, no labor laws, no unions, certainly. So the only company that can survive when all that demand was lost, that's why this is the depression, because wages keep going down and we have this glut, this oversupply of goods, and no one could buy it. It's called the Walmartization of America. If you want to be able to understand what's going on with this economy, that's it. That there's been a race to the bottom, that people just keep their either stagnant wages through the Bush years. The CEOs are making an incredible sum of money. The differential, the inequality is like nothing we've ever seen, which is exactly where we find ourselves in the Depression. You had the have all lots and the have not muches. And the problem is why that's bad for everybody is because when the have nots, because of the Walmartization of business, and just the outshoring and the cheapest outsourcing of goods, everything comes crashing down because you have supply and demand are not in a balance. So even it's in the interest of those CEOs who are making this money, but you can't see past that because it's only my bonus check. And now we're going to say these guys need their multi-million-dollar bonus checks or they're not going to do what they should be doing that's good for them and good for our economy. Melissa's in Los Angeles with a thought on this. Hi, Melissa. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Nancy. Just calling to say, considering the shoddy workmanship of anything Chinese, the U.S. might look forward to a population explosion with the new condom contract.
Yeah, Chinese condoms. I don't know. You know what? I think that that's pretty funny. But I mean, that's just, to me, the, just those two words put together make me laugh.
Well, I mean, considering, I mean, if I'm a guy and realizing, you know, all the lead that Chinese puts in their products, I think I'm worried about putting one on, you know?
Thanks, Melissa. But it was pretty funny. Yeah, there'll be lots of jokes here as far as this is concerned. Chinese condoms. Please, people. I mean, this is beyond it being funny. It's ridiculous. 866-991-9927. I just want, before we part today, I got to just talk to you a little bit about Paul Krugman and his reaction. Critics, so many critics, so little time of the toxic asset buyout plan. I'll share with you his consternation when we come back on the Nancy Skinner Show. Is your head spinning enough today with all this economic talk about bank bailouts, toxic assets? You'll be hearing a lot more about it. Primetime news conference tomorrow with the President Obama. I'm sure this will be the all things economic will be pretty much the focus. Oh, maybe a couple of questions about, say, Iran. 866-991-9927, the number to the program, to the Nancy Skinner program, that is. 866-991-9927. For now, so Paul Krugman, I had to digest this like everybody else did. Got the details this morning. Apparently, it was leaked to the Times over the weekend, so he had more chance to digest the details. But he finds himself. He says this is more than disappointing. In fact, it fills me with a sense of despair. And you know, I really like and admire Paul Krugman as an economist. But here's what here's his problem. He is saying that it's assuming that the bankers know what they're doing, that we're going to use the market expertise. That the first plan, as I said earlier or the beginning of this program when I started talking about it, I said the Paulson plan was just like buy the used lottery ticket, okay? Already the drawing has already happened, and you know that's a losing number, so just buy that. That's just craziness. This is what we're going to do is we, the taxpayers, will give investors – like, we'll loan you the money to buy them, and we'll let the market expertise, which I generally agree with, on cap and trade and stuff, let the markets decide what the true value is. Here's where he might be right. All right, the reason that, you know, the market can value assets, like a cap and trade or you know, all these things, these you can bet, like, on events happening or whatnot, is when your own money is at risk, when you have a market, that's the whole principle of a market, then you're going to do all your homework and you're going to have real due diligence that, you know, you're right. Okay. So you're going to go into a company's books and you're going to really check that company out. Is it just a book on paper? Do they have earnings? They have assets? They have markets? You do the whole business plan kind of thing, right? So if it was their risk, if we are loaning money, this would be my concern, if we are loaning money to private investors to go ahead and take a chance and use their expertise on what these assets are valued at, then they don't have the downside risk that we would want. Do you get that? If it's their own money, they would take the due diligence and make sure that they were purchasing those assets correctly. So part of me likes this plan. Here's how I would change it. And I think that the public should support it. The idea of doing nothing is just, like my guess, that GOP pollster said, this is just a recession. And most of these guys, clowns, are out there saying, just let the markets fail in Fox News. All these, oh, just let them, you know, we do nothing. You can't do that. We can't do it. It's just right now, I told you, it's domino theory. They all go down. We all go down, okay? Because of the interconnectedness. But what I would do to this plan, if I had markup ability... If I had the president's BlackBerry, dear Mr. President, I like this much better than Paulson's plan. I like the fact that you're using market expertise, but I would say that there needs to be a lot more downside risk for these people. We can't basically finance their speculation on assets. And my second piece of advice would be that before you agree to this sweetheart deal for Wall Street, because they're all happy, 500 points, markets are all up, everybody's going to be happy, and there's something to be said about restoring confidence to the markets for everybody, because there's a sense that we're on the right track, and that helps everybody. So I do agree with that. But what I would say is we're not going to do this unless you buy the whole deal, okay? this is a marriage. This is not living together. And the deal is you have to pass this, and I'd say this to Congress too, the housing plan has to pass. Stimulus bill, the infrastructure projects, the energy, the health care, everything has to pass. And then we'll do this. Because then what you're doing is this is what they want. It's called leverage, negotiations. This is what Wall Street wants. They want us to buy up all their toxic assets, and here's what we need for those assets to really have any value. Do you get what I'm saying here? Now, that's the whole question. What value are these? We're not just talking about mortgage-backed securities, like the bad subprimes. He's explained this, right? Then they get bundled, and they are now a stock, a security. And then credit default swaps are insurance on essentially those. But there's other crazy instruments that people are going to say, these banks are going to say. So the other problem that Paul Krugman has is that, and I agree with him on this, is that these guys bankers bet their entire company that there was no housing bubble. Because of the individual, and it's not that I think that they didn't all know that there was that they didn't accept that there was a housing bubble, but they were making so much darn money in the process that it didn't matter. It's a Ponzi scheme. I mean, you know, anything like that, you're fine with it as long as it doesn't burst. And so the fear is that if what he calls for is that they temporarily take control of truly insolvent banks and clean up their books like they did in Sweden in the 1990s, like we did after the SNL debacle in the Reagan years. And he says there's no reason we can't do the same thing now. On that point, I would agree with him, because I think, and then give them upside risk. Then go to the Obama plan, okay? But I don't trust these guys from the get-go to tell you, you know, they're going to cherry-pick which assets they want to sell, and then we're going to end up getting stuck, the taxpayer. They'll keep the assets that they feel have value, and we, the taxpayers, will get stuck with the yucky stuff. Okay, is that understandable? 866-991-9927. So I think this plan is a good next step, but I am I'm not thrilled about it. He ends up by saying that his concern is that the political capital will have been used up. So we're gonna put a lot of capital just to pass this plan, and then he says there's no way it can work, and the capital will have gone away, gone bye bye. And so then we can't go do a do-over. So I say what we do now is we all, you know, say it now. Speak your piece now. Call your members of Congress. Or call me, and we'll talk about hatch a plan. Go to my website, nancyskinnerlive.com. We'll hatch a plan for saving the economy and getting those condoms back in the United States. We'll continue this discussion tomorrow on The Nancy Skinner Show.